This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. As you may know, if you're a regular listener to the show, we're celebrating Science Friday's 25th birthday this year. And in fact, it was 25 years ago this week that we got our staff together and started to make the program Science Friday. As part of that anniversary celebration, last month I took a trip to the Iron Horse Vineyards in Sonoma, California, where my mission, it's a tough one, was to taste 8 different blends of the same sparkling wine and pick my favorite for a special Sci-Fry bottling. Here's a little taste of our visit to Iron Horse Vineyards with David Muscard and Joy Sterling.
Science is very important in winemaking. But most important is the craft of winemaking, and that's something that you only learn by doing or by observing, and certainly working with somebody that's done it for a number of years.
And how long have you been doing this?
I believe it's 36 years, 20 years here at Iron Horse. You know, you lose count after a while. And my name is David Muscard. I'm the winemaker at Iron Horse Vineyards. That is my lucky task in life. And we're standing in the middle of one of our most beautiful Pinot Noir vineyards, and this will be used for making a beautiful red table wine. This is actually a grape press. So if you look up, you'll see a hopper up there. The grapes will, like a giant funnel. So all these bins of grapes will be funneled through that. You ought to pop one in your mouth.
It doesn't taste like Concord grapes like you expect, you know, or like that we get in the store. It's very sweet.
It is sweet, yet it has a nice bracing acidity that gives it a cleansing on the palate as well. And it's just plain yummy. Inside this room is where we do the final steps in the sparkling wine making production. The bottling is relatively simple. We'll have the wine, we'll have extra yeast, and we'll have extra sugar. And we're expecting that fermentation to all take place inside the confines of a champagne bottle.
Okay, so now we're gonna go down and taste.
We are. We can't put this off any longer.
Do you want me to help pour?
Absolutely. So if you look down at your sheet, wine number one is the 2012 Blanc de Noir Cuvée that we have added, in that case, 8 milliliters of Blanc de Blanc Lex, 4 milliliters of a brightly colored red wine. We also added on the next wine some Pinot Noir. So each glass has some variations in these different items that we're going to be adding. You follow that?
So it's the same three items, but just in different proportions.
That's right. Yeah. So now what we need to do is just simply get to business.
All right. Wine number one. Tastes good. One is a little stronger than two. Three is good too. This is a tough business. By the time I get to four, I may not care.
Did you purposely add that color effect to influence the outcome?
Sure. It sets the stage. If this was in a dark glass and you couldn't see, your brain wouldn't be working on that. You would just simply go on what it smells like and then what it tastes like. But you can't help it as a human being to start thinking about what that wine is going to smell and then taste like. Ira, have you come up with something?
In judging the different glasses here, what my final judge was the flavor, but it was also which one would I'd like to have more of. And that's the one I wound up picking, which was the number 7 on our list.
Starting with wine number 1, going on through wine number 8, I was giving you variations on a similar theme. And I think we've chosen a wine that will fit beautifully with fall foods and the whole fall experience.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that.
I finished mine.
Yeah, and I finished mine too. All 8, almost through 8 of those glasses. Somebody had to do it, right? Well, it really was a true test of senses, let me tell you. And as you heard, lots of sensory factors, like the color, can influence the choice of wine. Color can influence our sense of smell and taste, and subtle changes in environment with the glassware itself might make all the difference between liking or disliking a glass of wine. And now that we have wet your palate a bit, let's talk about some of those sensory phenomena that can occur when sipping wine. With Charles Spence, he's a professor of experimental psychology, University of Oxford in the UK, and head of the Crossmodal Research Laboratory there. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi there.
You're welcome. Dr. Spence, in that piece that we heard, the winemaker was talking about adding a little bit of red wine to his sparkling wines to give it that pink blush color. Does that really change your brain? Does it prime it?
Most certainly does.
Yeah.
I guess whenever in everyday drinking and tasting, we're always going to see the wine before we put it to our lips, the glass to our lips. And our brain can't help but kind of predict or make expectations about the likely taste, aroma, flavor, bouquet of what's to come. And so those expectations kind of anchor our experience when we do taste. In a way, it's almost like we're not actually tasting. We're kind of occasionally comparing our experience to what we expected. And if what we taste isn't so different from what we expected based on the color and any other cues, then we kind of live in this world of our expectations and never quite update enough for the actual experience that we have.
I want to invite our listeners to ask if they have any questions about wine. Our number, if you'd like to phone us in. Let me get the paper with the number on 844-724-8255. As if I should know it by now, right? 844-724-8255 is our number. This idea of the color, the taste, and whatever, do we have an evolutionary reason for some of those cues?
I guess it's sort of yes, in the sense that what kind of world would we be in if we had to put everything to our lips to taste it in order to know whether it was nutritious or poisonous or not. So our brains kind of learnt to make predictions and say, okay, I've learnt that when I see kind of a ripe red fruit colour, it's probably going to be sweet. Mm-hmm. When I see something that's green, probably it's unripe, maybe sour, less nutritious. If I can make those predictions, then I can, I'm in a better place to know what which trees to climb for the nutritious fruits and what else to eat. So we're always trying to make these predictions, what correlates with nutritional qualities in food and drink, and use those predictions in order to kind of sort of second guess or anticipate what we should consume.
One of those relations you've done experiments with, you've gotten people to drink wine under different colored lighting. Did that really make a difference?
It really did. So I think in what might be the world's biggest experiential experimental wine tasting, we had about 3,000, a little over 3,000 people in the South Bank Centre, underneath the South Bank Centre in London, back in this May Bank holiday of 2014. And we gave them all a glass of red wine, a Rioja, in a black tasting glass, so you couldn't see the colour. And then we asked them, people, to rate the wine, saying how fruity or fresh, how much they liked it. Initially under just regular white lighting you might have at home. And then we changed the lighting to red, then we changed it to green, each time asking people, what does it taste like now? And then added in some music into the background as well, sweet and sour music. And what we were able to show were those 3,000 kind of regular drinkers, not wine experts as such, that we could get about a 15 to 20% change in people's perception of the fruitiness or freshness of the wine, how much they liked it, simply as a function of the background illumination in the room in which they were tasting.
So wine bars probably know this, you would think, that they should have a certain kind of lighting and music.
And there is a certain sense in which intuitively sometimes designers, experienced designers, may pick up on these things and incorporate them, not necessarily knowing why, or sometimes feeling a bit kind of embarrassed that, you know, why should the room lighting change the taste of what people order? Why should the music playing in the background change what people say? And yet it does. So it's kind of our job in a way to test those intuitions, provide evidence that for those that really do matter, and some other things that we think that should matter actually turn out not to. And it's kind of bizarre in a way that those background colors do make a difference. But in that sort of tasting environment with a black tasting glass, if all you've got is a red lighting, that primes all sorts of notions for us. About sweetness, and that then again anchors the tasting experience. And when we had the winemakers who came to the Colour Lab, this event, they were the kind of real experts. And you think, well, they would not be affected by the background colour. They can just identify what is in the glass and the taste and the bouquet. And yet they were coming away saying, wow, we need to know about this and we need to change our kind of cellar door experience in order to deliver a different kind of experience for those who come to our wineries.
Interesting caller. Let's go to Denise in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hi, Denise.
Hi there. I have a question, and I'll admit I did step away from my radio for a moment, so you may have covered this. but I am blind, and I wondered what effect that has on my perception of taste. Am I just missing a spectrum of taste, or do I maybe taste things more accurately without that visual preconceived notion?
I suppose it depends in a way on whether you were born blind, congenitally blind, or became blind later in life.
Mm-hmm. And what would that difference be?
So those who have never seen may not have the kind of visual imagery that those who, say, become blind later in life, for a number of years after people become blind, they can still imagine what things look like, what their partners look like. And it can be that mental imagery that does much of the work. Much in the same way, I suppose, that you see there are kind of these dine-in-the-dark restaurants that are attempting, in some cases, to try and capture the experience of the blind. If you lose sight, does that mean that your other senses are more acute, you attend more to taste and smell, perhaps? But again, it sort of depends on how long from when the vision is lost. And even those of us who go to a dine-in-the-dark restaurant, say, and try a glass of wine that we cannot see, nevertheless, our mind might be making images of what we think that wine, from its temperature, from its bouquet, what I think it looks like.
Hmm. Let's talk about, now that we've talked about vision, what about sound? You've done experiments in how sound affects the wine drinking experience, and we have two clips here of two different sparkling wines. Let's hear the first one. I'm getting thirsty just now. And the next one. Boy, they were different. They really were different. What makes them different, Charles?
So I think sound is often talked about as the forgotten flavor sense. We think about things, what things taste like and what they smell like, maybe even the sight of them in the case of the white and the red wine. But the sound of things, that's something we never really think about. And yet I think it's key to our experience of flavor. And again, even when somebody pours something in front of us, from the sound of the pouring, we can tell so much about what's in the glass. We can tell perhaps the temperature, is something hot or cold? Those sound different. We can even tell the kind of carbonation. This is something that you find wine writers intuitively talking about. They say they love the sound of the bubbles in a fancy champagne. And it's just not the same in a carver or in a soda water. And our research online with sounds just like the ones you played demonstrate that we really can tell the difference between different kinds of carbonation. And we have an appreciation, a preference for, I think for mine was the second one rather than the first. It felt sort of creamier somehow.
Yeah, well, the first one was a flute glass, and the second one was a wider glass. And I guess it matters how the bubbles get distributed, and the sound bounces around, too.
Sure. Different kinds of carbonation, too. So I think from the sounds of pouring, as we heard, you can tell something about the temperature. You can tell something about perhaps the glass size. You can tell something about the kind of drink that's been poured in, maybe even the viscosity. All that information is there. We never really think about it because we always have, normally we can see the wine, and yet our brain picks up on those cues, and they, too, can subtly change our expectations.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Dr. Charles Spence of Oxford. Let's talk about the cap. You know, when you bring a bottle of wine in and you unscrew the cap rather than pop the cork, aren't you already at a disadvantage just from seeing that happen?
From seeing that happen or from hearing that happen, because it's very distinctively different sounds of the pop of the cork and the crack of the screw crap. And this is something that does set expectations too. And once you've heard those sounds or you've seen what kind of bottle closure was used, you cannot unsee it or unhear it, and that will set expectations. That, if I could give you a completely blind taste test, the chances are the majority of consumers, just social drinkers or even wine experts, would prefer, if anything, the screw top. And yet, when we hear the closure, when we see the closure being opened, we all have a preference, or many of us have a preference for the cork-stopper bottle.
Right. What about the bottle itself? The size, the shape, the color, does that influence what we think about the wine?
Most certainly it does. The one thing we've been most interested in over the last couple of years is, again, following up on some of the comments you find in some of the wine press about some of these sort of new world producers who are delivering their wines, mostly all of the 750 milliliters, but in bottles that are so heavy that in fact sometimes you find wine waiters now in restaurants, you know, coming, when you've picked a wine from the list, they'll bring the bottle to the table and say, feel that, sir. Just feel the quality. You made a good choice tonight. And that's all about the weight of the bottle. And when we've tested, evaluated the 600 or 700 bottles in the Oxford wine store, just down the road from where I am tonight, What you find is that for every extra pound you pay, you get 8 extra grams of glass, and that now we find there are some producers out there who are making bottles that it may be 2.25 kilograms of glass when the wine is emptied, compared to others where it's just less than a kilo full of wine. So a huge difference there, and some are accentuating, almost caricaturing the weight by deepening the punt, by thickening the glass, by raising the shoulders in order to convey a notion of quality.
Can you take a really bad quality wine and make people think it's a good quality by how you bottle it and glass it?
That is the question, isn't it? When you come around to my house, what should you bring?
I think
there are limits, certainly here, and some of the latest neuroscience and neuroimaging research, when you look at which parts of the brain light up when experts and social drinkers are given wine that you tell them that's expensive or cheap, it turns out there are limits, and that maybe, you know, mid-price wines can be shifted all over the place. But what do you call it? Two-buck chuck. You might have a bigger challenge just by putting it in a heavy bottle. You might convince some, but I think not all.
I think we'll leave it right there, Dr. Spence. Charles Spence, Professor of Experimental Psychology, University of Oxford in the UK, and head of the Cross-Modal Research Laboratory there. Very interesting. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Pleasure.
And also thanks to Jamie Good, author of the book I Taste Red. And check it out if you're a wine and science geek. It helped us with a lot of our research.